Back again to BadQuaker.com podcast, where liberty is our mission. Today is Wednesday, December 12th, 2012, and this is podcast number 12. No, it's not. It's podcast number 245, and I'm Ben Stone, and with me today is
Kai. Hello.
Hi, Kai. Thanks for being on the show again. You hardly ever come on the show with me.
I know. I'm a terrible daughter.
So it's 12-12-12-D-12. Today is the 12-12th of the 12th of 12.
12 cubed.
Not really, because it's 2012. It's not like it's 12-12.
True.
So, like, there's no magic going to happen today because of numerology or anything, right?
You don't know that? There might be. Magic bunnies and elves could come out and plant seeds everywhere or something. I don't know. I'm not up on the numerology of what will happen at certain dates. Planets are supposed to be aligning.
Today?
Yeah, I've got hippies on my Facebook feed telling me planets are aligning.
But in some ways, aren't planets aligning like pretty much every time anybody picks any particular day or moment?
Well, yeah. Well, and what confuses me is I get all these people a lot who are like, oh, the planets are going to align and there's going to be. But, you know, you can, I mean, I have an app on my phone that lets me look at the skies. Google has mapped the skies for me.
Mm-hmm.
And they're nowhere near each other. They're not aligning. Like, I don't understand. Like, are we talking about fictional planets? Like, magical astrology planets that aren't the real planets?
Well, I think the word align has a fuzzy definition when you get into astrology. I can't believe I confused those two words. Yeah, astrology. When you get into astrology, I think the word align has a very fuzzy definition.
I think a lot of things have fuzzy definitions when you're talking about astrology. Astrology is a lot like a lot of other different things in that it has some really cool archetypes of human behavior built into it, but you know, as a system for learning about specific human behaviors, it's fascinating. But as a system for trying to predict the future, it really kind of falls apart very quickly.
That's kind of because, well, I don't know. I suppose this is wandering into the realm of religion, but. You know, whether or not it's even possible to predict the future.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you can look at human actions and you can make predictions as far as like, well, you know, you can see things that are where humans are taking actions that are going to produce certain results.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But
and that's where human archetypes come into play, is you can actually see, you know, this is they are embodying these ideas. And so when these ideas are embodied, often this is the result,
mm-hmm.
you know. But to actually say that there's some mystical reason simply because Saturn happens to be at a specific place in the sky, I don't know. It just kind of falls apart.
Yeah. Well, that goes back into, like, you know, really, really old-style mythology mm-hmm. where, you know, where the stars actually controlled people's behavior and
right.
so forth.
Right.
Which, well, anyway. So, but we only have a few more days until the Mayan world comes to an end.
Well, and that's true. That's because the Mayans said it.
Yeah, because
they had a calendar.
Because they ran out of calendars and went, you know, I don't think anybody's going to be looking at this beyond this date. So let's just not work it out any further.
Yeah, well, I don't know. The whole Mayan thing kind of. It's very confusing to me because I have yet to actually figure out where any of the ideas of the Mayan calendar come from. Because as far as I can tell, there's no such thing. Like, they haven't, there's no archaeological, it's not like they found a calendar.
Really?
I don't really know where they're coming up with this. And, like, modern Maya don't believe in this. So I don't know where they're coming up with it. I don't know what sparked this idea that there was a Maya calendar.
I'm sure it has something to do with marketing and a movie or somebody making a profit somewhere.
Probably. Or somebody starting a cult.
So speaking of cults, I wanted to talk about the goofy local politics.
Oh, yeah, that's like a cult.
Yeah. It takes faith.
It does take faith.
So I've talked before, you know, about how this one guy has been mayor for like forever.
Right.
As long as we've known about this area, this one guy has been the mayor.
Right.
And he had one serious challenger one time. I busted you.
Sorry, Ian.
This is for the listeners here to have a little view back behind the screen, sort of a breaking the fourth wall thing. Ian Freeman had listened to one of our podcasts and heard how we would constantly say, to each other as we're talking. And so Ian's like, you know, that's really not professional radio behavior. You guys are really not, that's not done in radio. And he was polite about it. He's trying to help. He's trying to make the podcast a better thing. So he gave some good, solid advice. And we're trying to, we're trying to learn that kind of stuff. And I really appreciate advice from, because I get advice from Michael W. Dean on audio, and from Ian and from Mark Edge over at Free Talk Live as well. And it's really helpful because they know a lot of this stuff that I don't know.
Right. And especially, like, if you look at the quality levels of the podcasts, not necessarily content-wise, but just audio-wise.
Now I just you're did doing it again.
But just audio-wise, from when we started with that one little two-way microphone sitting in the middle of both of us until now, which we have some really pretty professional equipment.
Yeah, and thank you to the donors for that, by the way, to the people who donated to badquaker.com.
Yeah, because all of this equipment comes from donations, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Pretty nice.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the cult, the cult of state.
Not trying to sound like a Freedom Fiends podcast here.
Yeah, we're just bouncing around talking about microphones. So this one mayor has been mayor of the town. Like, as long as we've known that this town existed, he's been the mayor. And then he had one serious contender, a very popular local businessman who ran the donut place in town, straight exactly across the street from the police station, oddly enough.
And it made tons of money. I can't imagine why.
So so the donut man ran for the mayor one year. And out of the clear blue sky, this well-established, good citizen, you know, a member of society, all that kind of stuff, is randomly arrested for marketing cocaine, for dealing cocaine. He's arrested right in the middle of the...
That's why his donuts tasted so good.
Yeah.
You thought that was powdered sugar.
I'll take more of the sugar-coated ones, dude.
The special donuts.
So he gets arrested for dealing cocaine in the middle of the mayor of the running, for mayor. And of course this sweeps back in the new mayor cause he drops out of the race. The old mayor. So the old mayor just gets reelected again.
Yep.
And then goes years without being opposed. Cause I mean, who would oppose him?
Right. The last guy who opposed him got put in jail for cocaine.
Well, he didn't actually, you know, as soon as he dropped out of the mayoral race, and as soon as the election was over, all the charges against him were dropped.
Funny that.
Now, you know, if they actually...
You know, they don't drop cocaine charges. Like,
right.
Trafficking cocaine, they don't drop those charges. Those charges don't get dropped. It's not just like, oh, well, you know, you rapscallion, you.
Yeah, not for that.
No.
So, you know, so that's kind of obvious to anybody who's paying attention. That's kind of obvious. And so we saw that happen. We watched that happen. Another thing that we saw happen was they had one of the two main streets through town had just freshly been rebuilt, repaved, widened, and they had done a lot of work to it, put in a center divider, put in landscaping in the middle. They had put a lot of money into this road, and it's like about a, oh, I don't know, how far is it from IGA out to the airport?
Like probably 3 miles, 2 miles. Yeah, two and a half, 3 miles.
Yeah, like 2 or 3 miles. And it was all brand new road. It was all in really good shape. Mm-hmm. And then they found out through one of their, you know, lawyer advisors, they found out that there was free money available if they have bike routes. If they do construction and put in bike routes, then they get free money from the federal government.
I like money.
No movie references.
Aww. But I've seen that one.
So so they go in and they take this brand new or almost new stretch of road and they rip it all out. And they put it and they repave the whole thing, and they didn't change anything except they added the stripes to make a bike lane. Now, they didn't widen the road. They didn't change the road in any way. And there was absolutely no reason to rip out perfectly good pavement if all they needed to do was repaint it.
Right.
But they did, because they had the money to do it. And if there was some way to find out...
Who would needlessly build the roads?
Yeah. So if there was some way to find out, like, who got the contract, how much federal money was in, how much state money was matching, who decided who got the contract... Is that your cousin's contract, road contracting company that got that? You know, who leased all the equipment that came in and did all that? What union got the exclusive union contract on the labor for that? Where'd all that money go, and who made the decisions? But you see, there's no oversight in that. The mayor and the city council, they make their decisions. You can go down there and sit there and listen to them, but they basically talk in code, and all the important stuff they do behind the scenes anyway.
Yeah.
They don't do in those meetings. They talk about whether or not we need a dog catcher or whether the county dog catcher is good enough. You know, they don't talk about anything meaningful.
For the record, he is not.
So you know, a lot of money came in over that little project. And then another little project that took place, well, actually, like 6 or 8 years ago, a local businessman, we should explain the donut.
Yes.
The donut theory.
This ties
different donut from
beautifully
the,
into the donuts. Speaking of donuts.
Having nothing whatsoever to do with cocaine or the donut salesman in Springboro, Ohio. There's a criticism of anarcho-capitalism called the donut dilemma. And in the donut dilemma, you have the argument that libertarian property rights wouldn't work without government, because what you would have is you would have somebody who homesteads land, and then somebody else who comes and homesteads basically a circle around that land, encircles that land with a homestead. And then in order to respect the rights of the donut-shaped homestead, the person in the hole of the donut couldn't cross their property to get out, couldn't cross the donut property to get out of the hole property. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So this is where... detractors, is that the right phrase? Detractors of anarchism?
Critics of anarchism.
Of anarcho-capitalism, say that libertarian property rights wouldn't work without a coercive government to come in and force the donut guy to give access to the property in the hole of the donut.
Right.
And so you would have to have eminent domain to get a road built across there, because the donut holder could cut off the hole owner of the donut hole.
Right.
And so people like Walter Block have put some effort into that, and they said, well, okay, so here's some obvious solutions. Since Lockean ideas of homesteading, which is what libertarian property rights are based on, They don't assume that property goes all the way to the core of the earth,
right?
Nor does it go into the sky into infinity. The property only exists where you've homesteaded it. So, for instance, if you've dug down into the ground, you know, 15 feet to dig a basement or 100 feet to dig a well, then you have homesteaded down to that depth. But you don't own to infinity below that, or you don't own the sky to infinity. So the guy in the hole of the donut could get out of the donut through several means. A helicopter is mm-hmm. the obvious. Mm-hmm. A bridge, mm-hmm. A tunnel, you know. There's all kinds of answers to the donut problem that you just have to be creative and think about a little bit.
Right. Which, being creative, is what the market does best.
Yeah, yeah.
But in a situation like we have here nearby, we have that exact same problem happening because of government.
Yeah, the government aggression has created, in Springboro, Ohio, has created the donut dilemma for a businessman.
Mm-hmm. And the problem is that he can't use the market to fix the problem because there's a government monopoly. But the government is being forceful and coercive and won't fix it for him.
Yeah, and they've killed his business because of it.
Yeah.
So basically, to explain his situation, something like 6 or 8 years ago, he bought this property. And the property is in Montgomery County. It's on right on the border of Montgomery County and Warren County. So it is borderline property. And so he's surrounded on all sides on the Montgomery side of his property. He's surrounded by several big businesses, a children's hospital, a church, a very large church, and a sports complex place.
And the highway.
The freeway comes through there, the Interstate 75. Mm-hmm. So he can't exit in any of those directions because the church doesn't want to give up any property, and the state won't make them, and the hospital doesn't want to give up any property, and the state won't make them. As state being government, government's on all level here,
right?
Because we're talking about multiple layers of government,
right?
And the sports complex won't give any property over to him. So the other side of his property butts up against Warren County. Now, he's all in industrial zone. The hospital is industrial. All that stuff is industrial zone, or commercial, I should say, commercial zoned. In Warren County, though, the property that butts up against him is all residential zoned. Now, there's a driveway leading to his property that goes from the Warren County side, from a street there in onto his property, and he has a right-of-way given to him by the county and by the state to access his property via that right-of-way, according to the law. But the problem is that right-of-way goes through a residential property in Warren County. Now, in addition to having Montgomery County and Warren County, we're also dealing with Clear Creek Township. We have townships here in Ohio, which is just another useless layer of government that does absolutely nothing mm-hmm. but collect taxes. And they give tickets, too. No, I'm sorry, that's still taxes. But anyway, so then in addition to that, he's also, his property is outside of the city of Springboro, but his driveway is in the city of Springboro. So we have two counties, a township, the city of Springboro, and the state of Ohio to contend with here. This poor guy is dealing with five layers of government.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he wants to open his business, and so he goes through all five agencies of government, and he gets all of the proper, he has attorneys, he has accountants, they go through all the stuff, he gets all the proper permits, he comes up with a business model, he presents that to all the different government agencies, they all approve of it, everybody's happy, he pays all of his, bribes, I mean, really, that's what they are, he pays all the regulations, all the fees, everything. They rezone his driveway so that he has a temporary or an exception. Oops, smacking the mic. So he has an exception for his driveway.
Getting excited, flailing about wildly.
Yeah, swinging my arms while I'm talking. So he has an exception for his driveway, so he can use it commercially. And all of the different agencies have approved of this. He's paid all the right stuff. He's filed all the right paperwork. So then he invests, and I can't remember how much. I think it was like, do you remember the dollar amount he invested? It was like $400,000.
Yeah.
Because he paved his whole property.
Yep.
He put in storage units, including big storage units that store like RVs, boats, motorhomes, you know.
Indoor RV storage.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not cheap.
Yeah. He put real money into building this security. He put up security stuff, cameras, security gates, the whole nine yards to put in this modern storage facility. And he operated it for, I think it was like 6 or 8 years, successfully operated it. And then one day, there was an anonymous complaint. When we get back from the commercial break, we'll get back into this. I'd like to talk to you about Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. The Liberty Classroom is a collection of courses on history and Austrian economics presented in an easy, convenient way. There are video files and audio files you can download. You can participate in discussions online in the discussion boards. And there are live sessions with Tom Woods and the other educators where you can directly interact with the instructors. Now, who is this for? It's for anyone who realizes that they didn't get the real story in government-approved schools. It's also great for homeschoolers and unschoolers. Join Tom Woods and his team, and they'll equip you with one of the very best tools the Liberty Movement has to offer, knowledge, real knowledge in a usable form. At Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom, you can get all this for only $99 a year. Now, that's less than the cost of one movie DVD a month. This gets you access to absolutely everything on their site, all the courses, plus additional courses that'll be added later, the discussion forums, the live sessions, everything. So how do you do this? You go to badquaker.com. You click on the banner for Tom Woods Liberty Classroom. By using that link, you'll let Tom know that I sent you, and you'll help badquaker.com. Thank you very much. Okay, thanks for sticking with us through the commercial break. And we were talking about this business that got stuck in the donut dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the donut dilemma is not supposed to happen with the government, it's supposed to be a phenomenon of anarcho-capitalism.
Right. So he's got this this anonymous complaint.
Mm-hmm.
Now we should leave him for a moment and come into this neighborhood.
Yeah.
And talk about what's happening in this neighborhood.
Let's leave that cliffhanger right there and tell a totally unrelated story. So some years ago, I don't even know how many years now, my wife and I bought an older Class C motorhome. It was not ugly or anything. It was in good condition.
It was the one at Porkfest.
Yeah, if you saw it at Porkfest, or if you've seen the pictures on Facebook or over on the badquaker.com forum, there's a very good picture of me and Eddie Free when I was interviewing Eddie Free at Porkfest with us sitting next to the motorhome. And it was a good motorhome, but it was older, and it was Class C, so it's the kind that kind of looks like a van in front and has like an overhead and stuff like this. So that motorhome sat in our driveway for years. I mean, we leveled it, we plugged it in, we kept, because it was kind of like what the survival folks call a bug out vehicle.
Right.
I had it like that. I kept it. I never winterized it. I kept it full and packed and ready to go at all times. And there was a real practical reason why.
I mean, you guys even used it as like a third refrigerator.
Yeah. We used the refrigerator actively as you know, and the cabinets and everything was part of our extended pantry, one might say. But we have a lot of pantries around here. Yes, we hoard food. It's true. I have enough light bulbs to last me the rest of my life and still leave some for future generations. But anyway, so the motorhome, and it was a very practical reason we kept the motorhome like that. Both myself and my wife had elderly parents, and so we didn't know at any time we would get the call, you know, you have to drive halfway across the country and that's exactly what happened. Over the course of time, my wife lost both her mother and father. And I lost my mother years ago, but I lost my father just, 2 months ago or something.
Yeah.
So that's why we had, why we kept the motorhome, you know, ready to go at all times, because we didn't want to have to get a call and then take 6 hours to try to get the motorhome ready. We wanted to close the house up, lock it, walk out, jump in, fire it up, and drive away. Well, unplug it first, but
right.
So anyway, so we kept the motorhome in the driveway, leveled, plugged in, and, you know, ready at all times. And it was never a problem. And then this year, in what, September of this year, we decided to upgrade our motorhome. And so we bought a brand new Class A, much larger, much nicer motorhome. It's basically a $100,000 motorhome.
Mm-hmm.
And we bought it specifically because, you know, I don't know what the economy is going to do. I have no idea. I don't know if the house that we're in is ever going to be of any real value, or if, you know, they're, I don't know what the future is going to, what's going to happen.
Well, and plus you are beginning to actually go do more events with the website.
Yeah. So
you're speaking at the Liberty Forum in New Hampshire in February.
We're hoping to get out to the Jackalope Festival.
Mm-hmm.
We want to get back to Porcupine Festival.
Mm-hmm.
We're thinking about getting out to the Wyoming Free State thing that they do in the summer. You know, so we want something that's going to be really reliable for long haul trips. And our older motorhome was good. It was in good shape and everything like that. But whenever we would really take it out and have to drive it, it took a lot of money to keep the thing stable. So,
well, you basically drove from Porkfest back to Ohio with no brakes.
Yeah, yeah, that was fun coming down out of the mountains of Vermont, losing the brakes, and then going all the way across New York with no brakes. That was fun, but yeah.
Let's not do that again.
Of course, I didn't tell anybody about it till I got back to Ohio, because I didn't, yeah. But anyway, so we had this old motorhome for a long time. No problem. There was never a problem with the city with that motorhome. We buy a $100,000 brand new Class A motorhome, beautiful motorhome, pull it up into the driveway, and we get a ticket. Well, we get a warning. And so we say, all right, fine. Well, we got a warning. We can't park this thing in the driveway because you're not allowed in the city of Springboro to park RVs, campers, or boats or trailers in your driveway, even though it's your own driveway. And it doesn't matter.
Well, it's not your own driveway.
Exactly.
You don't own
it's
your
not
property.
Really your property. So you know, we thought, okay, well, it doesn't cost that much to have a storage unit, so we'll move it over to because there's several storage places around in this area. So we pick out a storage place and we move the motorhome to that storage place. And then almost immediately we get the call that my dad is fallen very ill. And so we get the motorhome and take off, head to, and we go through, you know, what, 2 months that it took before that situation was resolved. My dad died. And so we were in and out of the house. We would be in the motorhome. We would be in Eastern Kentucky. Then we would be back here. And there's really no time to put it in storage for 2 days or something. So it was in the driveway again. And then we'd take it out and we'd be gone for a week or two. And then we'd be back for a week or two. And so we got a second notice, a second threat from the city that we couldn't have the motorhome in the driveway.
Which is funny because, and you might think, well, maybe they changed the policy during that same time frame.
Yeah, no change.
But right around the corner is an old, old motorhome that is all tarped up and just sitting there.
Yeah, same neighborhood. Driveway. Same neighborhood, literally like 2 blocks from right here where we're at, in the same neighborhood, same types of houses, same income levels, is this old Class C old motorhome, older than our old one, and it literally has blue tarps, you know, bungee corded all over it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sat there pretty much all the time we've lived here, like 12, 15 years, it's sat there.
Yeah.
And the city has never had a problem with that one. And so what magically happened? What took place that all of a sudden we can't have a motorhome in our driveway? And as we come to find out, the people across the street and down a couple houses, they also have a Class A motorhome, and they have a place to store it, though. They always store it. And they had planned on trips this summer So they brought it over to their house and they, you know, did some cleaning on it and stocked it all up in preparation for their trip. And the city gives them a warning. Even though they're literally, it's only going to be there a short period of time while they're getting it ready for the trip. And so the city gives them a warning. And they're like, oh, where did this come from? And they have no idea. And the city told them, well, we had an anonymous complaint. And so they didn't know who the anonymous complaint came from, of course, because it's anonymous.
Right.
And then
stinking anonymous.
Yeah. Those hackers are everywhere. So
always making trouble.
So then we were talking to them. We didn't know this took place. We didn't know that within a couple months of us getting our warnings from the city, they had also gotten warnings from the city. So the neighbor lady that owns that motorhome, she was talking to a different one of the neighbor ladies here, and they were talking about how nice our motorhome looked and stuff like this. And the other lady said, yeah, I don't know why they don't have it parked there anymore. It's gone, you know, and maybe they're gone. And then we were walking the dog the same day that this conversation was taking place. We were walking the dog, my wife and I, and we literally walked around the corner, and right there were these ladies out there talking. And so we got engaged in the conversation, and this was the first we heard that they had also gotten threatened by the city. And so everybody kind of shared their stories, and as it turns out, the other lady in the story who doesn't have a motorhome but was talking to the motorhome lady, I'm getting too many characters in the story.
What are you, Tolstoy?
She had noticed a stranger in the neighborhood photographing our motorhome sitting in the driveway, even though she had never seen the car before and she'd never seen the lady before. The lady parked like down the street at this other person's house, walked over to our house and took pictures of our motorhome. And then it was like the next week that we got the threat letter. Oh. See? Now, and it's really funny, you know, because this lady who couldn't identify the stranger, she knows everybody. She knows every car that comes in and out of the neighborhood. She's that neighbor lady.
Right.
She is constantly looking out her windows and constantly watching everything that goes on. So if anybody in the neighborhood would know that there's a stranger here, it would be her. And that's what her story was, that the stranger had come in, taken pictures of the motorhome, and that connects to who the anonymous person was who turned in our motorhome.
Right. Now, you've said that they're at the town hall meetings,
mm-hmm.
that they, like, people on the board for the town were like, why are we doing this?
Yeah. Yeah, this came, I was looking through the minutes of one of the city, of one of the town City Council? The city council meetings. Yeah, that's what it's called. Words. Anyway, so I was looking through the minutes trying to figure out, you know, did they change the law? Is there some weird thing going on? How come all of a sudden this is happening? And why is it? Because we've noticed before, oh, here's another aspect of this. The other people with the other motorhome that got threatened, they know other people in town who had their motorhomes and boats threatened. All this is recently.
Mm-hmm.
All this is within this short time frame. But now here's the funny part. The old junkers, old junk trailers, debris trailers where people, you know, throw their lawn trimmings and junk like that and haul it to the dump. Those trailers are not getting ticketed. Only the really expensive toy hauler trailers and the real fancy boats. Not the junk boats that are laying upside down in the side of the guy's yard. Not those boats. Those are not getting ticketed. The nice speed boats, the nice cabin cruisers. Because there's big lakes nearby here and recreation is a really big deal here. Those are getting ticketed. The junk is not getting ticketed. So this is not about city image.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a town full of yuppies here.
This is the opposite of city image.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm looking in the notes of the
city council
meeting. Of the city council meeting, and I'm trying to find out, you know, what has changed, what happened, why is this going on, and I find a debate happening, in one of the council meetings, and the city councilmen are asking the mayor, why is it that we're now selectively enforcing this rule? And the mayor's like, well, we only enforce it when there's a complaint. because the mayor says, we have to do this, otherwise the town will turn into a trailer park. We'll have trailers in every driveway. That was his logic, that if we didn't do this, there'd be trailers in every
Which
driveway.
Which is amusing because there are trailer parks in this town.
Yeah. So that's his logic as to why that they're selectively enforcing this. It's only going to be where there's a complaint, and the complaint can be anonymous. Okay, now that we've set that whole thing up, so now we're forced to pay to store our motorhome someplace. And now here's the funny part: the cheap motorhome, the old motorhome, the worn out motorhome with tarpaulins hung across it, doesn't get ticketed. The 100,000 motorhomes, the $100,000 motorhomes, the fancy boats, the $200,000 boats, the fancy toy hauler trailers, they're getting ticketed. And you think about it, someone with wealth, if they get ticketed for their motorhome
or threatened,
they're going to take it to a storage place, a reputable storage place, and pay close to $100 a month to store it. But the people who can't really afford that kind of toys, the people like the ones around the corner who have that older motorhome, they can't afford $100 a month just to store a 15-year-old motorhome.
No, they'll go to their cousin who lives outside of city limits and park it on their back lot or something.
Yeah, yeah. They'll just park it on somebody's farm or whatever. So there's no profit in driving the poor people to store their boats and stuff off out of the city.
If you have a storage unit that you're trying to get people to.
Yeah, if there's someone with a storage unit. Now, let's just theorize for a moment. What if you owned a chain of storage units around Western Ohio? What if you owned four or five of them? And what if you wanted to expand your business? What if you wanted more business? And what if you knew someone? Or what if you were just, what if all it took was to say, give a mayor a free storage unit? And then he would start enforcing an old law that was already on the books that kept people with nicer equipment from storing the stuff on their own property. It's just theoretically, of course.
Well, you wouldn't even necessarily have to do that. I mean, you can, let's legitimately say that the mayor is not corrupt.
Okay, hold on.
As a thought experiment, let's just imagine in our mind that the mayor is not corrupt. But let's say that, you know, you, as the owner of a storage unit, take the mayor out to lunch just because you're a local businessman and you want to chat with the mayor, you mm-hmm. know. So you're chatting with the mayor and you just start putting in little, well, you know, you don't want the town to become a trailer park, you know. And it's too bad. You've got that old law on your book, but, you know, you can't enforce every one. But you should at least let people turn in a complaint.
If they complain, sure, yeah. If they complain. And you don't want to put a neighbor on the spot by revealing who gave the complaint, because that would be uncomfortable in a neighborhood.
Right.
Yeah, so you should leave that anonymous.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, you're running for re-election. Is there a possible way to contribute to your, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's all above the board. Everything. What's illegal?
I'm a business. I'm a local businessman. Yeah. You're a local
a normal thing.
Official.
Nothing unusual here at all. Nothing at all illegal.
Yeah.
Things happen. People do stuff. Money, you know, money talks.
Yeah.
So now, what if that same person, I don't know. What if that same person were who owned interest in companies that own storage units? What if that same person were very wealthy and had a tremendous amount of influence in the county and had actually been one of the people that helped bring, there's a famous park. What's Kings Island? What is that? Amusement park. Okay, when that first moved into this area, there's one particular family that was part of the influence that got that to move into here. This is way back in the 70s. They're old money. They're old Ohio money. And they have a lot of power when it comes to what happens in the county. Then what would happen if all of a sudden some new storage units were put in the area? And on top of all that, they bought property literally butting up against somebody else's existing storage unit in the area. And then all of a sudden, the complaint comes through that somebody's storage business has a driveway that goes through a residential area, and they want to complain about it. It would be odd. This is a very odd circumstance, isn't it?
Mm.
And yet, we have this guy who has this business outside of town, who's been there 6 or 8 years, invested a huge amount of money in his business, and all of a sudden, with a complaint, the city retracts his exemption to the rule that governs his driveway, and he's not allowed to have any commercial vehicles or any commercial traffic on that driveway, even though his storage units are almost full.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there have been people that have had stuff in his storage units for years, and now no commercial traffic can go across his driveway. And so all of a sudden the county and the city turn against this businessman out of the clear blue sky. The city does because, you know, they're the local enforcement on it. And then the county backs up the city, even though the guy has kept up all his permits. He's done everything he's supposed to do. And then we find out that this family that is, you know, this very well-connected family has actually bought property right next to his. And for some reason, there's this push to get all the motorhomes and everything in the whole town put into storage units. And there's some that have just been recently built around here. And they're connected to that. It's a really odd circumstance, isn't it? And then he starts getting fined by the city. Because everybody who had their stuff in his storage units had to get it out and get it out quick. So people...
It definitely would have been interesting if the neighbor lady would have taken a picture of the stranger's car, and so you could run plates on it and see who it belonged to.
Yeah, definitely. So he got fined then for all the traffic of people trying to get in and out of his units to take their stuff out. So not only did his business get destroyed and shut down, he also got fined for other people taking their stuff out of his storage units. Like, what was he supposed to do? Not let him have access to it?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yep. And the thing is, like, this is brought up not because this is some fantastic tale of how this little town is super corrupt. This is literally every single city government in every single state across the country.
Yeah, there is no exception here. We are not at all odd or strange. It's how the system works.
It's how the system has to work. Mm-hmm. There's no other way for it to work.
Yeah, once you accept the state, once you accept the concept of the state and you have forceful government.
And this is why the idea that, you know, oh, well, if we could just get down to smaller government is easier to corrupt than bigger government. When you have a huge government, like, you know, the United States federal government,
mm-hmm.
is actually fairly difficult to have corrupt.
Well, because it's so big and dumb and it doesn't communicate very well with itself.
And there are layers of bureaucracy that grind things slowly, and you have to work with so many different people.
And so many people in big government really don't care about anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get paid to just sit there and hold up stuff.
And
hold
there are
up paperwork.
So many different people with so many different agendas.
Yeah.
You know, so it's actually more difficult to corrupt a larger government than it is a smaller government. When you have a tiny little city government, you're only dealing with a handful of people.
Yeah.
It's easy to grease those palms and get things moved through.
Let's break for our commercial and then we'll pick this up because we're pretty late already. Did you know author Taryn P. Lupo has a new novel out called One Nation Under Blood? When a rejuvenative blood technology is developed that pits the young against the old, the government must take firm steps to address the war of supply and demand brewing across generational lines. Blood is not the only thing bought and sold in this dystopian tale of technology, economics, and independence. Vampires are now very real, but we never expected them to wear our grandmother's best Sunday dress. BadQuaker.com uses HostGator as our web hosting service. It was fast and easy to get set up, and the support we receive is top-notch. They have helpful and friendly 24/7, 365 live technical support and a 99.9% uptime guarantee, and they have some of the best prices in the business. If you have a website, or if you want to have a website, check them out by going to BadQuaker.com and click on the button for HostGator. And thank you very much for supporting BadQuaker.com. The Bad Quaker staff has discovered how easy it is to get everything you need for the holidays at Amazon. Everything from the coolest decorations to hangover remedies, and everything from the latest movies and music to poop stain remover. If you follow the Amazon link at BadQuaker.com, Amazon will give BadQuaker.com a tiny portion of the purchase. It won't cost you any extra, but you will be supporting this podcast. Thank you. Okay, thanks for sticking with me through the commercial. And how do you like that new commercial? Ah, I'm pointing at Kai, but she hasn't heard it yet.
I have not heard it.
You've heard it. The listener has now officially heard the new commercial, but Kai hasn't heard it yet.
I haven't heard it.
It's a sort of a holiday-ish Amazon with sleigh bells in the background.
Ooh,
kind of a thing.
Very nice.
And
fancy.
It's really cool to go over to Amazon and check the Bad Quaker account at Amazon and see. You don't see any, like, there's no personal information on there. You just see what was purchased and what the price and what BadQuaker.com's cut
right.
is of that.
We don't get to see who purchased it.
Right.
But
right.
we do get to see. It's sort of like Google search results.
Yeah.
You can see what they've used to find the website, but you can't see who used it.
Yeah. But it's really easy. It's really interesting to see all the different things that people buy. You know, everything from like can openers to, you know, electric motors.
Mm-hmm. Coconut oil.
Coconut oil, yeah.
Which, yay, for the yay, person who bought
yeah.
coconut oil.
I actually,
thank you.
That's a good price, too.
Yeah.
I'm thinking maybe I want to, you know, because, you know, coconut oil is expensive.
Yeah.
But all kinds of stuff, movies, DVDs, books, toys. Already you can see people buying Christmas toys. Cause, I mean, it's just obvious when you see certain things
right.
being purchased like that. You know that it's that's the goal of it, but. Anyway, so now we've just made like an hour, not an hour, like a 2-minute commercial out of a 30-second commercial. Anyway, so back to the property rights thing. So yeah, we have a situation right here in this town where, well, on the edge of the town, where you have the donut dilemma, which is supposed to be a criticism of anarcho-capitalism and libertarian property rights.
Right.
But actually, it exists under the foot of five layers of government, and it's there anyway, and it's enforced by the fist of the government, and the guy has no solution whatsoever because government doesn't care.
Right.
They just don't care.
Right.
They're like a honey badger. They just don't care. And so he's stuck. His business is gone. You know, I was thinking about going over there and talking to him and see if I could get an interview, but, you know, a person invests that kind of money into that kind of a business. I kind of have a tendency to think that was his retirement hope.
Yeah.
You know, and that's crushed.
Yeah.
You know, so what do you want him to do? Go on welfare? You know, take out unemployment?
Yes.
Go ahead and retire without it and just live on Social Security?
Yes.
You know, that's what the government wants. They want everybody as dependent as possible. And so also, you know, they want to stimulate the economy by doing things like grinding up a perfectly good street and then repaving that street. But where does all that money come from? They have to have robbed it from somebody else first
yep.
before they could give it to the city and everybody takes their cuts and then end up giving it to somebody's cousin's construction company and everybody gets a cut, including the union bosses and everybody else, you know.
Meanwhile, they have streets in this town that are terrible.
Yeah. The street right in front of our house is horrible.
It's terrible. They've ripped up, and they're ripping up again, this street right out,
yeah, like
you know,
two,
in front of our neighborhood.
Over. Yeah.
They've
worked on that thing over and over and over.
And they're not fixing it.
Yeah. It's just a continual source of income for somebody's construction company. But again, all that money has to come from somewhere. Before they can give it to anyone, they have to have taken it from somebody else.
Yeah.
And so when you're crushing businesses like this, And all the time taking more and more in taxes, more and more in fees, more and more in fiat by, you know, by increasing the money supply and fractional reserve. They're just basically stealing money from the wealth of the money from the rest of us. Mm-hmm. So they take more and more and more. And then they utilize, you know, cronyism to give it to select people that are not really adding to the economy and killing real legitimate businesses that are. And then, you know, using the fist of government to do things like what they did with the with us, with the motorhome.
Yep.
It's very frustrating.
Yep.
And then there's the donut dilemma played out in with the existence of the state.
Yeah. So, I mean, it brings you back to that, you know, I don't know what the world would look like mm-hmm. in a truly free market system. I don't know what. I don't know how things would be played out if there were no fist of the government there, but I know that when government is there, it destroys it.
Yeah.
You know, it breeds nothing but bad things. And so without the government, it has to be better. Like, the market has to be able to find better things than this, because you couldn't possibly find worse ways to do it.
Right. Yeah, let's see if we could devise a worse way. Well, we start off by funding a group of thugs through theft. And then those thugs have crony relationship with friends and relatives and financial supporters. And so the money that they steal, they spread around among their thug friends. And this is the system that we currently have. So the same thuggery pays for every level of government. That's about as bad of a system as you could possibly devise.
Yep.
And that's the state.
Yep.
That's this belief in the state is based on the belief that that is a good system, that will produce good.
That's the best system.
Yeah.
It's the only system you could possibly have.
Yeah. And any rejection of that system, you must be crazy, or you must just want people to be savages or something, you know.
Yeah.
Now, we have this upcoming end of the world. We were talking about the Mayans and everything, and we have this upcoming end of the world coming at us. And what happens if, just instead of the end of the world, what happens if everybody misunderstood all that? And you know the doctrine of the rapture, you know, the uh-huh. people are all wrapped up about the rapture. What if that's all a misunderstanding? And really, the Mayan calendar and the aligning of stars and the rapture and all these other things are really just this mystical event that happens, say, at the end of this month, where all government disappears.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Just poof, they're all gone. We look around, they're all gone. What would the world look like? What would happen? What would, you know, what would people in the Free State Project in New Hampshire, what would they be doing if all of a sudden everybody in government vanished in one day?
Unfortunately, I think one of the reasons why you can't achieve anarchy through revolution is that there would be a power vacuum there.
Yeah, that's always brought up as an argument, the power
and
vacuum.
So I think if government were to just vanish, I think because there's still that mindset that there needs to be government, mm-hmm. that more thugs would just take over their place.
Yeah.
So I think what needs to happen is actually, it's the phrase evolution, not revolution. You have to convince people that they don't need government.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't not have government until there's not a market for government.
Right. Because that's the deal. If something suddenly, like if the government's collapsed for whatever reason, there would still be that desire for it. There would still be a market demand for something to fit that role.
Yeah.
If we talked about how property rights would work, because we're kind of talking about property rights.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to talk about property rights, you know, Michael Dean and I were talking about what would things be? How do you handle the problem of Native Americans having lost all this vast amount of property to the federal government through just blatant acts of aggression, mm-hmm. lies in contracts that, you know, treaties that the people representing the federal government signed with different Indian nations, and then, you know, went backwards on them and just lied,
right.
and violated those all those agreements, and then just took their property, you know. Well, what do you do about something like that? Do you take like the whole city of Casper, Wyoming, and give it to the Sioux Indians or something?
Right. And unfortunately, you know, as much as that situation sucks,
mm-hmm.
Nobody in Wyoming right now who lives in Wyoming made a treaty with any Indians.
And
or
no
Native Americans.
And no American Indians are alive who had those treaties broken.
Right.
This is Lysander Spooner's agreement argument with the Constitution. He didn't sign the Constitution. Nobody he knew signed the Constitution. He didn't agree to it.
Right.
Therefore, it's invalid. It has
right.
no.
And so the only thing that you can fall back on is property rights, which is, have you homesteaded that property? Is that property legitimately yours? And so when you have, like, you know, the vast tracts of federal land, those are available for homesteading.
If we didn't have a federal government, you know, preventing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Those would be.
We're imagining the government disappearing in this scenario.
Right. Those would be available for homesteading. But say, you know, a person's property that he has his house on and that he mows the lawn and that he lives on, that wouldn't be available for homesteading because it's already homesteaded.
Right.
And as a person, you are totally within your rights to defend your property that you have homesteaded.
Yeah, and so theoretically, if the government was to vanish, then all authority of the government would vanish.
Mm-hmm.
And so technically, whoever is literally on the property at the time, possessing it, maintaining it, improving it, is the homesteader, because all law prior to that would be ignored anyway. Although, you know, people tend to set up courts and tend to do these things, but you would still... even in an anarchio, in a libpair, that's what Michael and Nima call it, libpair. Even in a libpair, if that happened in a very short period of time, you would still have dispute resolution organizations that would say, okay, well, what is your right to this property? And but it wouldn't go back generations. It would go back, where did you get it from? Did you get it, you know, did you obtain it in a rightful way? And so, you know, the actual house and the property that a person lives on in Casper, Wyoming would still be theirs. On the other hand, the vast tracts of land that are supposedly owned by the federal government, which was the majority of the whole West,
mm-hmm.
is technically, you know, according to the government, is owned by the government. If you ever see a map of like Utah or Nevada or any of those Western states, the amount of government-owned land is in Nevada, I think it's at or close to 99% of Nevada is owned by the government.
Yep.
So all that would be open for homesteading. You know, all of the
even the glowy bits in Nevada.
Yeah. Giant sheets of glass. As far as the eye can see.
I want this bit. It has night lights.
And the three-headed snakes.
The cactus glow green at night.
Oh, boy.
Home on the range.
Where the deer and the antelope fly. We're starting
Nevada.
To get goofy now. But that would really, you know, that statement could really upset a Native American who sees part of their heritage is based on owning that property and seeing that someone stole that from their family, you know, not that long ago. And this could be very upsetting to a Native American. But really, if you take it back, at some point, you have to draw the line and say property rights start here. And since we don't have contracts with our ancestors, you know, and since our ancestors can't speak for us and we can't speak for them, the contract has to start and stop with each person.
Right.
So, for instance, I couldn't go and demand property rights and ownership of Buckingham Palace because those stinking Normans kicked my family out.
Right.
You know, I would say, well, you know, the Saxons had rights here, and we had already established property rights, and you stinking Normans came and kicked us out.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, then a Briton comes up and says, well, you stinking Saxons came and stole our, you know. And then the next thing you know, the Picts are out there with their faces painted blue, stabbing at, getting all stabby and everything.
Those Picts, they're always so stabby.
That's why they're picks. They're picky. Why they get upset when people take their land anyway.
Ah, picked racism. Yay. It's funny because there aren't many left.
Yeah. Because they're not here to defend themselves. It's like making fun of the Amish on the radio, huh?
Aww.
We love our Amish neighbors.
Okay, right, well, I think that's our time.
Yeah, I think we better wrap it up. We're starting to get goofy.
And, you know, offending people.
Yeah. Okay, folks, thanks for listening to the BadQuaker.com podcast, where liberty is our mission. Be sure and check on the BadQuaker.com website and check out our forum. And see you later. Bye.